Welcome, everybody, to the Digital Nomad Experts podcast by Beach Commute. Today, we're on to part two of the top 10 most Googled questions about the digital nomad lifestyle. So as a reminder, what we've done is we went into some of our SEO tools to figure out how many times and what things people are searching regarding the digital nomad lifestyle. And we're using that as a list of things to talk about to answer those questions, backed up by numbers that you're asking most often. And this list jives pretty well with the questions that we get through email. You guys write us in a lot of great questions at hello@beachcommute.com. And we wanted to back that up with numbers. And sure enough, these are the questions that you're asking. So without any further ado, we're going to go through the last five on the list. And as we go through these questions, we're going to briefly answer them because it could take us an hour to answer each one of these. So we're going to do our very best to condense the answers into a very short, succinct response. And anytime that we have a full episode for each one of those questions, we will reference that and tell you where to go and find that. So, Marissa, let's dive into the first question. Do you want to start us off today?
Perfect. So these are all good questions. And like you said, they're big, hefty questions that we really could talk probably 2 hours minimum on each of these questions. So we'll do our best to give the SparksNote version of these. And there's a couple episodes we'll refer back to that we have actually talked longer on each of these topics. So number one, or I guess this is number six technically, but number one today is, what are the pros and cons of being a digital nomad? So this is, to me, a big, lofty question, but I'm curious, Jeff, what's the first thing that comes to your mind with whether pros, cons, both? What comes to your mind with this question?
So, yeah, again, very difficult. We've done an entire episode on this one, episode 139, pros and cons of being a digital nomad. For good reason, there's a lot of both.
Of both,
and
yeah.
And it does require quite a bit of unpacking. So to keep it brief, I'm just going to list the first thing that comes to mind. So the pros... experiences. You get nothing like it. You know, just the day-to-day living in new cities, awesome. But also we've talked about going to strange and unusual places nearby, these once-in-a-lifetime experiences that are near where you're staying. Incredible. Like, there's nothing that beats that. Second thing.
I'll have to look up that episode while next time I'm talking. But keep going for your list.
Yeah. That was a fun one, yeah. The second thing is community. That's... it probably should be number one for me in order of priority. It's just the best friends that I've ever made were during travel. This, you know, the community that you interact with is somewhat like-minded in that they're just kind of humble, curious about life, usually very successful types of people, very smart types of people, and sharing these experiences with them that's the reason why we do this, you know?
Yeah.
So those are the first two that come to mind for the pros. The cons, it gets tiring if you go a little too hard. I'm home for a reason. I'm tired. Got my own bed. Yeah, it gets tiring.
Wait, when you say it gets tiring, can you expand on that for just like, like too much, but like when I hear that, it almost sounds like I'm tired of, I'm tired of travel, but it means like you're tired, like your body's tired.
My body has traveled.
Your mind has also traveled. When you say it's tiring, it's like physically taxing, mentally exhausting. Not that you're tired. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, I'm tired of seeing the world, you know, I don't know.
That'll never go away.
Yeah, I was interpreting it as that, but I knew it's not what you meant.
Tired of the toll that it can take on your body. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Waking up in different places and resetting and trying to figure out where the grocery store is and all that kind of stuff. Like all the things that you have to do when you get to a new place, it just kind of wears you down. You just need, for me, I need a reset, and that could be a little bit of a con in that I need that reset. Some people don't. Oh, we got friends that do this full time, and I don't know how they do it. They're just Energizer bunnies.
A lot of them are very tired, too, and don't know where to stop. After many years, I'm talking like 5, 6, 7 years of this.
Maybe it actually is happening. We just don't see it. Maybe they've hit a wall.
I talk to people about it a lot,
That's interesting. Yeah.
But yeah, those are some good pros and cons.
Exhaustion. Any other cons? Like, no, I don't think anything just immediately jumps out at me. That's the biggest one. I'd like to hear what you think, though.
Yeah, those are great. I'm glad you went first, because I was like, where do I even want to begin with this? But what episode number did you say that one was, where we really, like...
Pros and cons?
Yeah.
That's episode 139.
Yeah, do check that one out if this topic is interesting to you, because I feel like you and I actually took the time and like really thought through like all the pros, all the cons, laid things out in a more succinct way, talked about these in a lot more detail. I think you covered, yeah, the ones that like come to mind first. Those are great. So I would say to add to that, it's just, I would say the pro of it is I remember back like being in the corporate world and having 2 weeks of vacation and like maybe going to one different country a year and just thinking like I'll never see the world if I don't change my life somehow. So to me, the biggest pro is just you have the freedom to get everywhere in the world if you want to go. I mean, it's hard to go like everywhere in every country, but if you want to get to every country in the world, you can. If you just have like destinations you've dreamt of for a long time, I look at a lot of people who don't live this life and like, oh, I wish I could visit here. I have these 7 places on my bucket list and like we've been to all those places. You know, it's like you get to check off all the locations. So to me, the biggest pro of why I started this is like you can go anywhere you want, all the places you dream of, all the places you see on Instagram and magazines. There's no time constraints holding you back. A lot of people think there's income restraints. There's not really. You can travel really inexpensively as a digital nomad if you want to. So just, I guess the constraints of seeing the world are gone when you're a digital nomad. To me, that's like probably the biggest pro of why I got into this. And then as you kind of alluded to with the community and the friends we've made along the way, just like the experiences that you can have as a digital nomad and that you do have. It's like when you're home, and you and I can attest to this as well because you and I are both home right now. I love it for times. It's comfortable. It's safe. I say safe as in just like I know everything, you know, family nearby, but I'm not doing big new things, you know? And I think the pro of living as a nomad is you just, because you're in different countries, different locations, different places, like you're doing things that people are only doing like on their honeymoons, like 20 times a year, because you're like, oh yeah, I guess I'm an hour drive from this like wonder of the world. Sure, I'll go for the weekend. Like, it's insane. So the amount of experiences, yeah, why wouldn't I go do this? So just the number of like once in a lifetime experiences that you have as a nomad is like, you have thousands of them, and they're like every week, every month, if you want them to be. So I would say that's like those two are the biggest pros, and I'll just chime in and don't have to go too much detail. Like the people that I've met along the way for sure have been like such an amazing part of that. And then the con, yeah, like you said, it can become very taxing. You get really tired. You can get really burnt out. And sometimes the way I explain it is going to sound weird. It's like too much good sometimes. And sometimes it's a lot of hard things too. But I remember sometimes I've come back from being in the places that I've like loved and are epic. And it's almost like I'm so exhausted because it's so much good that I'm taking in. It's like the best beaches and like the best experiences and the best people and so much laughter. And I'm like, my body's tired from, you know, you can be exhausted and burnt out from not having much going on, but the opposite can happen as well too. So I know you touched on kind of like the hard things of finding a grocery store and finding new restaurants and just being tired sometimes, being around a different language that you have to like translate all the time, stuff like that. But just, yeah, whether it's too good or just really hard, both happen and it becomes exhausting. So sometimes it's just nice to go back to neutral, familiar, which is home for us.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, those are the top. It's not a terrible con, really.
I know.
Like, when you look at it, it's like
terrible.
it's really hard to come up with anything if, you know, being tired of good things.
Yes. Sounds.
That's when you get it pretty good. You're doing pretty good at that point.
I know. I can't even complain. But if we're being honest, I know. I think sometimes that's why it almost feels like you can't talk to other people sometimes when you go home, because you're like, this is going to sound really, really ridiculous. But I'm like, life, it's too good. I just have to come home. But yeah, it's true. That's the honest truth. But also sometimes it's just like you have food poisoning and you're sick in a country where you don't know anyone and you're tired and it's hard and you've
been there.
You have rough spiders in your apartment. I don't know. Like there's also hard things that definitely happen to you. And sometimes you want to run away and go home from that as well. So both exist.
And the episode that we were talking about, otherworldly destinations that you see while you're traveling. These are places typically that you would find a little outside of where you're staying. Like if you're staying in a major city, it's usually like a weekend type of trip.
Yeah.
That's episode 135. We came up with a list of quite a few. I think it's like 10 otherworldly destinations we've been to. That was a pretty cool podcast. That's worth giving a listen.
There was another one. I'll try to look it up as we're talking about something next. But it was, I think it was like places you only get to as a digital nomad. Something like that. That we were talking about some of the weekend trips that we've been on to just... No? I think they were a little bit different. I don't know. We'll go back and look. Search through. We've done a lot of fun episode locations. Did you find it?
Oh, no. I know what you're talking about, though. I think we recorded that over the winter.
Well, Jeff's searching. Yeah. We did a whole episode as well. And the whole point of this is, like, there's a lot of really, like, middle-of-nowhere destinations that a lot of times my example I always give is, like, if you go to Bali as just, like, a two-week vacation, you're going to probably go to the main island of Bali. But there's, like, islands off of the islands that... You know, I only get to because I was living there for months at a time, whereas you wouldn't have time to go to some of those like farther locations that you do get to go to as digital nomad life. Mm-hmm. And we did a whole episode on places that you and I had been doing that. So maybe we'll find it. If not, scour through. I don't think it was that long ago.
13 cool locations you'll only get to as a digital nomad. That's episode 129.
There you go.
That's the one.
There you go. So yeah, dig check that one out. All those.
Check out both of those episodes. They're both a lot of fun.
They're good. All right. So with that, Jeff, question number, I guess this is number two today, number 7 of 10. Is that right? Yeah. Is mm-hmm. The question just says, digital nomad jobs, what can I do? So I guess the question is kind of like, what jobs exist mm-hmm. for digital nomads? What can I do if I'm not a digital nomad and I want to be a digital nomad? That's how I'm interpreting this question. So what jobs come to your mind first, or just as a general answer to that question?
I mean, there's a couple different routes we could go down. You could go down the route of the easiest jobs to get into as a digital nomad. And then we could mm-hmm. also talk about the most common jobs and maybe the cross section. Maybe the cross section there. Like what I see most commonly, it's not the easiest, but it would be a programmer / developer. So that'd be people that work on websites, apps, backend type of stuff. A lot of coding that requires, and a lot of these people are self-taught. Some people take coding boot camps, sure. Boot camps, yeah. Actually, a lot of them take boot camps, yeah.
Yeah.
But they're mainly self-taught. So for those of you not looking, you know, I don't want to have a degree to get into being a digital nomad. That's a good path. Also, writers are one of the most common jobs that I've seen. I'd say probably around like 10 to 20% of digital nomads I know, I think, are writers at some capacity. Seems
maybe
like
you're just attracting writer friends.
Could be, yeah. Is it not that high for you?
I wouldn't say it's that high, but there's definitely a lot I can think, like, you know, sometimes when people talk about some digital nomad jobs, I like really have to rack my brain and be like, oh yeah, I once met one of those of the thousands that we've met. But the writers, like there's a lot of people who I've like lived with, traveled with, like firsthand that I can think of quickly. So there's a lot of writers.
Yeah, quite a few writers. It's one of the more common ones up there with programmer, I would say.
Yeah.
Writer, so that'd be writer, editor, content creator, that kind of thing. Marketers of all capacities. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'd say.
So many different marketers. Yeah.
Yeah. We've known like marketing coordinators, marketing project managers, and project managers kind of its own little offshoot as well. Yeah. Yeah. Project managers, marketing project managers. I was an SEO. There's been a few people in the community that I know that went down that path. Those are the top that come to my mind. Anything else jump out at you?
There's a lot. There's one. Will you refer to the episode? What was the number? We did one of the 7 most common jobs digital nomads do.
Yeah, it's episode 120. 7 most common jobs digital nomads actually do.
Actually, yeah. So check that one out. That one was
against the list you'll find on the internet.
Yes. Yeah. Backed by research and what we actually know to be true of people who we often travel with and meet, not just what some list has said. But yeah, you nailed a lot of them. There's a lot of graphic designers, different UX, UI designers, different people in HR of some capacity, whether that's kind of like recruiting, customer service, sales, there's all sorts of roles. So those are more of the typical, like your typical 9-to-5 sort of jobs.
Mm-hmm.
What we also did an episode, Diego and I did a 2-part episode. If you could give me the numbers of, it was like 19 of the most unusual jobs that we've personally met people doing. Mm-hmm. What was that one?
It's a 2-parter. So it's episode 45 and episode 47. For some reason they were split. We had something important to say in between.
I don't know why we did in between. So maybe we just didn't want to inundate you for 2 weeks with just like all these crazy unusual jobs. But to me, that one was like the 7 most common jobs. You'll get a feel of like if you really just kind of want to go that typical route and find the common things that you can apply for most easily on, you know, of the jobs that we even send out that we find for people. But then contrasted with that, I think it's actually just really interesting and inspirational to hear like all the weird, I say weird, just unique individual things that like, just you're like, you could do that and travel the world. Because to me, it's just a good reminder that there is no one size fits all. If there's something you do, you can usually find, or something you love even, like there's a way to do that remotely while you travel. Like there's just a range of things. So those are some of the most common ones. And there's all sorts of, you know, we do have entrepreneur friends as well. We talk more on this podcast about just kind of the jobs you can get with companies because it's faster, it's easier, it's more reliable. If you're listening to this, if you don't yet have any sort of remote income and you're like, I want to travel, I want to go tomorrow. Mm. The fastest way is going to be to work for a company and find a job that way. And that's why we share that route. But you know, if you are an entrepreneur or want to go that route, sometimes it takes years before it's profitable, but that definitely, you know, we have a lot of entrepreneur friends for sure. And they're doing all sorts of, you know, cool companies, cool jobs. So the, yeah, it's endless. The other resource I want to offer here is if you go to beachcommute.com/91, that's the number 91, we have a list of 91 different careers that digital nomads have done in our community that we've seen. So that's a fun resource as well. So I would say the short of it is there's a million different things you can do, but those were just, we threw out a bunch, like some of the most common ones. And then check out that other podcast episode just if you want some fun, unique ideas.
Okay, good. So let's go on to the next question here. What are, oh boy, it's tough. What are the challenges? What are the challenges of being a digital nomad? So it's not the cons side necessarily, yeah. The pros and cons. It's just maybe a little less negative than that. It's just, what's challenging? I mean, what are the typical day-to-day challenging things? I would start with work-related stuff. So everything that has to do with connectivity, you know, getting to a new place and or being in the place that you're in and making sure that you've got good Wi-Fi that's quiet, yeah. You know, you actually got a quiet space, you got stable Wi-Fi, you can actually hold calls. That can be a bit of a challenge when you're trying to work with your Airbnb host to make sure that it's going to be stable. And then when you get there, if it's not stable, what do? Do you find a cafe? Do you find co-working spaces? That's always the biggest challenge to me because it has the most direct impact on your livelihood. If it's not strong, if you have strong connectivity, you don't have a strong workspace, it can influence your ability to generate income for yourself.
So I wanted to add to that because I hadn't really thought about this I don't think I've ever talked about this on the podcast, but there's almost in places where, especially where maybe it's like working a lot of the time, but maybe like it cuts out often or often enough that you're always wondering, like, it's a really important call. Like, is it going to cut out? Like, and that, like, to, yeah. So even if it works most of the time, to me, there's this almost like underlying like stress that kind of like, if you think about something like software running in the background of a computer, like it's always kind of running of like, is it going to be okay? Is this call going to work? Is it going to cut out? Is it going to do this? And even if it does go perfectly, it's like the stress of wondering if it's going to cause you a problem, can it really like kind of, I don't know, it tugs on like your inner nervous system. And I don't always realize that until I go back home where I know like the internet is always working and always stable. And I'm like, oh, like what a relief. I just know I'm going to get on this podcast right now and record with you and it's going to work. So that definitely does add up, even if it's working most of the time.
So anything to do with that, you're generating income or not looking good to your clients, to your organization because you don't have good connection. That's very nerve-wracking. So that's why we've talked about that at length to make sure that you can mitigate that risk as much as possible.
Have all the backups.
I'll try to dig up that one. But that's top of mind for me. What would you add to that?
So interesting. I love like the contrast of our answers because I'm like, I wouldn't have, it's not the route I would have gone. Like the first challenge I thought of was like the con that we talked about, but just thinking about to add just something different than we've talked about. So I would say, just the burnout overall, the stress of, are you going to find Wi-Fi? Those are great ones. The first thing that came to mind on top of those was, this is like, again, it sounds like the snobbiest problems to have, the snobbiest challenge, but is like learning to say no, like not feeling like you have to do everything in a new location. So when you are going to some of the most incredible places in the world or cool new cities or new towns where if you were just there on vacation, you'd have a list of 30 things that you can, you know, new restaurants to try, like beaches to check out, hikes to go on, like classes to do, like everything you can imagine in a new place that you're, you know, imagine how you live on vacation sometimes if you're an active explorer, maybe not just like, well, also just sitting on a beach. So to me, it's like a reminder that this is normal life and I don't have to say yes to everything and I don't have to do everything on the that you're quote supposed to do in a new place. And so to me, I've over my nomad years really had to learn to like challenge myself to say like, let me just live here. Let me just learn what it's like to be a normal person. And I'll go on some excursions and do the things. But like if there's five of the coolest things that I don't do in a place, that's okay. And it's probably cooler just to live there. So I don't know, learning to not have to do everything was a challenge for me as part of nomad life.
It's a challenge for every new digital nomad. You see them do it every single time. Somebody new to the lifestyle, can't say no to anything. And then 2 weeks later, they're like, oh my God, I'm so burned out. Yeah. I haven't slept enough. I've been doing too much crap.
Because you're basically on vacation and doing a full-time job at the same time. And it's really exhausting. So learning
You're burning your candle at both ends. Yeah. You got to go through that phase, though. I mean, I went through it. Had fun.
I said yes to everything in the beginning. Yeah. But I had the energy, too. Somehow I could. So, yeah, that was like a challenge that I just, didn't think about.
Any other challenges jump to your mind?
There's just a challenge of getting, we talked about this some, but like just getting to a new place and having to figure everything out. So I think that's a challenge every time. So I think you kind of mentioned a part of it is when you get to a new place, making sure you have Wi-Fi and figuring out your Wi-Fi backups. On top of that, it's like, how are you going to get your phone to work? Do you need a SIM card? Do you have an eSIM? Do you know where your bank is? Do you need a bank? Do you need local money? Is it safe to walk in these places? What are the cool restaurants that I want to eat at? What are, like, and I don't mean like which fancy cool ones, but I mean just like your everyday, you know, if you're going to get lunch somewhere or something healthy, what grocery store are you going to? Like you can see, I could just go on and on and on. But think about everything you do in your normal life at home. You probably don't think about it. You take it for granted that you know how to get in your car. You're probably not going to have a car. Do you need to rent a car? Is there Uber? Are there taxis? How do you find them? Are they safe? Like the list goes on and on. So anyway, I say this not to overwhelm anybody, but it really is the true, you know, we like to be honest about nomad life. So the joy of getting to experience new places is, you know, by far makes it worth it. But it's the challenge. There's a lot of challenges every time you get to a new place to figure everything out. And that's why we really recommend, you know, going slow to start, because it takes that long just to kind of get in your, you know, where's the gym? Where you're working out? Like, what's your daily routine? How do you, you know, are you making friends, finding people, finding the weekly activities you want to do? That takes time. And then when you're moving, you just have to do it again. So that's a lot.
You just reset and you go through the entire checklist over and over and over. You get pretty good at it, though.
You do.
It's just doing it.
Yes. It takes a lot of energy.
We can offer a pretty good resource for part of that. It's the Instant Productivity Blueprint for Arriving at a New Destination. It's episode 130. So it's a little bit more tailored towards making sure that you're ready to start working once you hit the ground running. But it covers a lot of other stuff, like getting your SIM card, getting like figuring out where your grocery store is, that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of good resources in that one.
Perfect. All right. So that brings us to number 9 on the list. So the question here says, where can I get digital nomad visa? Like, how do I get digital nomad visas? This one says, where can I get them?
This was like a single country offering this. When I like maybe three
Estonia.
Years ago, or
it started
so.
With Estonia, I think.
It was Estonia, yeah.
Yeah,
this is a relatively brand new concept.
Yeah,
let's actually explain.
Yeah, explain what the concept is.
I don't know. No, it's like
you want me to take this?
it's almost like a temporary residency as opposed to a tourist visa, right?
Yeah.
Which basically means you get more time. You get more time to live there. You
without
don't have
having
to
pay taxes.
You don't have to pay taxes. You don't have to worry about the staying over fines, which can be significant depending on where you go. Bolivia, it was $4 a day. EU, it's like, don't come back for a year, stuff like that. Like,
yeah, people who overstayed Cape Town by a day, they're not allowed to come back for another year. You can't go back for a year if you overstay your Cape Town or your South Africa visa.
Mexico, they almost recommend overstaying your visa.
So you can pay a fine.
Yeah, exactly. So it's all over the place. So it gives you a little bit more freedom, but there's some drawbacks to it. And I don't know, maybe you can add a little bit of color to this one. But I do know if you stay on a digital nomad visa, I think you have to pay some taxes, right?
I don't think it's taxes, and it probably differs for each one has their own sort of rules. But basically, you're paying a fee to stay. So instead of if you wanted to stay somewhere for a year, most of the time before digital nomad visas became a thing, there's almost no, I don't know, maybe one exists. I can't think of a country off the top of my head that I, as an American citizen, am allowed to go and spend an entire year somewhere without without becoming a resident of some kind. Mexico is the longest one I can think of for U.S. citizens, where we're typically allowed to stay for 180 days. So you can stay up to 6 months as a tourist without having to pay taxes, without becoming a resident. It's pretty amazing. They're actually like kind of switching it up. Sometimes you get more, sometimes you get less. It's a little weird there now, but theoretically you get 6 months there. So the theory behind the digital nomad visa is like, instead of becoming a resident, which it's really hard to do in a lot of countries, like it's not just like, oh, I want to be a resident there, let me be it. Like sometimes you can, sometimes there's a process, sometimes it takes a year, sometimes it takes like just a whole application process and it takes time. So it's not easy to stay anywhere else in another country for a year. That said, there's a lot of countries now that are trying to capitalize on the income for their country, for the finances that digital nomads bring, right? The more tourists you have, the more tourist income you have that are paying your local citizens. So the reason that countries are now doing this is they're saying like, okay, we don't want you to be a permanent resident here, but we'd love to come and have you spend money in our society for a year. That sounds great. So you can pay for a digital nomad visa. There's usually a lot of stipulations, which are you have to make either have a certain amount of money in your bank account, or you have to prove that you make a certain income. And usually it's not so much. It might be like you have to prove that you make, and it varies country by country that have them, but let's say $2,500 per month or $3,500 per month or something like that.
I've got an example right here. Yeah. So Spain, your visa cost is $265. It gets you one year with a chance to apply for up to 4 years. And the requirement is $2,215 per month.
Yeah. So basically, they want it to make sure that you have money coming in, that you're not just like going to illegally stay there because it's less expensive. So they want to make sure you have income coming in that you will then spend in their country, and you pay that one-time fee per year to be able to do that. So it is pretty cool. Like, it's very revolutionary if you think about where we were 5 years ago. Estonia was the first one to do that. It was like this whole big thing. Like, you can go live in Estonia for a year, you know, without being a resident. You just pay this fee and prove you make a lot of money. And now there's, you know, probably 50 countries or so that offer some sort of digital nomad visa. So you can do a Google search and find that out. So I would say, if this is appealing to you, like if you know you want to go live somewhere for a year, like if you're like, okay, when I get my remote job, I just really want to go live in Spain or live in Barbados. That was like, I think, one of the second ones to do the digital nomad visa, or live in whatever country that is. Check out if that country has a digital nomad visa specifically, and check out the requirements and see if you fit it. And then you just apply on that country's website for that. If you're more like Jeff and Diego and I, and the way that we've been traveling for the last, you know, 8 years, however long, we typically just go however long we can stay as a tourist on that visa. And sometimes it's up to 3 months, and then you can reapply and stay longer. Sometimes it's 1 month. Sometimes it's, you know, 60 days. You really just have to look at your citizenship, and then how long can someone from your country with your passport stay in that country. Sometimes you have to apply for even a tourist visa. Sometimes you can just go and get what's called a visa on arrival. Sometimes you don't need a visa at all. You just show up and you get 60 days and you just live there for 2 months and go on your way. And you don't have to pay taxes. You don't tell anyone that you're, it's not that you're there to work. You're just traveling as a tourist, and you're just there on a tourist visa you know, tourist visit. So yeah, hopefully that gives the enough information about that, but it can be confusing to a lot of people who think like, I must go get a digital nomad visa to go anywhere I go if I'm doing that. And that's not usually the case, but it depends how you want to travel.
It's turning into a serious thing. It's, like you said, Estonia, this was back in just 2020 that they created this digital nomad visa.
Yeah,
and so since then, it's now 2024. There's 66 countries that are offering that.
Amazing. So, yeah, the question I checked, it was like 50-something. Yeah, so
it's expanding really quickly. And the question was, where can you get these digital nomad visas? You're going to have to Google it, because that list is changing constantly, and we're not going to list out 66 countries. So
yeah, and just Google like digital nomad visa Spain, and it will come up, and you'll see the application process and all of that. But it's a good question.
Yeah. And I just did a run through just to check like a general idea of how much it'll cost you, income requirements. Most of Western Europe, you're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of about $35,000 to $40,000 US dollars per year in salary. Yeah, averaged out. The one outlier here is Iceland. They want to see about $8,000 per month.
So, wow.
Yeah, right?
Iceland, it's an expense. I've traveled Iceland. You need it. It's an expense. Exactly. Everything is just more expensive in Iceland. So I guess that makes sense. They want to make sure you won't run out of money while you're there.
Yeah. And I've got actually going to put it in the show notes. I've got a resource that lists out every one of the countries.
Oh, awesome.
The requirements, cost, all that kind of stuff. So I'll just put
perfect.
That in the show notes.
Yeah. So check the show notes for that. And while you are making a note of that, I will go on to question number 10, which I guess this kind of goes on to more cost of things, which the question is, how much does it cost to be a digital nomad? This is a really good, big question. I feel ashamed that we haven't answered this more on this podcast. Jeff and I'm going to make a note. We're going to do better. We're going to do an episode on it. And we don't talk about it all that often because there's such a range. Like, I think people think like, okay, does it cost X amount and like I have to make this much or I can't be a digital nomad? The truth is that like, I mean, think about people living like the backpacker life. You can do that as a digital nomad. Like, you could live probably off of like $15,000 for an entire year if you really wanted to. You could go to a country where the cost of living isn't that high. You could stay in bunk room hostels and work on, you know, in a co-working space or cafes. Like, you can do it really cheaply if you want. And there are people I know who do that. There's also, on the flip side, people who, you know, entrepreneurs or people who work for companies who make $200,000 plus a year, and they are spending a lot more on rent. They might pay $2,000 to $3,000 a month to stay in a really nice place that they love, and, you know, I don't know, just going to eat nicer meals. Like, so the point is, like, the same way, I don't know, it's different because I know cost of living in different cities can be more or less, but it really depends where you go, how much you choose to spend. The biggest cost is going to be your rent or your accommodation. So if you give up your apartment back home or your home, your condo or what home, whatever you're buying, renting, whatever it is, if you let that go, you can live usually less expensively depending on the country you're comparing it to. But if you look at the US, for example, most countries, not everywhere, but most countries you go to, the cost of living is going to be way less. So you can either, you know, pay the same amount you're paying back home and just have like amazing, you know, cool place, the pool and a penthouse that like you would never buy, you know, 2 minutes from a beach that like you would never have in the city back home. Or you can just choose to kind of live the same way you've been living in the same standards, but you're going to pay a lot less. So anyway, there's not an exact amount, but I would say like literally if you wanted to live on $15,000 to $20,000 a year, it'd be, you know, you're going to have to strategize and be tough on meals and accommodations, but you could do it. If you want to spend $100,000 a year, you can also do that. So that's kind of my first stab at it. But do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, just in general, I think people might have it in their head that they need to save money. That's going to cost them extra to do this kind of lifestyle. A lot of times because people have the digital nomad lifestyle kind of synonymous with, or they think of it the same terms as going on vacation. And vacations are typically very, very expensive because of the places that you're tending to go to. The places that you're staying are more touristy, more resort-like, and vacations are just in general kind of expensive. But we got to make it clear that digital nomad lifestyle is not a vacation. You're working and traveling, and a lot of what you're doing is living in this place as opposed to just going and doing all the touristy things. And all the touristy things, you'll have those costs that you're used to back at home if you're coming from North America following you, right? So if you go to the most touristy places in Mexico, you might end up paying U.S., you know, equivalent types of prices.
True.
But when you're going and living in digital nomad locations, they don't tend to be the touristy spots, or at least you don't stay in the most touristy spots. Like, you're not going to go to La Rambla in Barcelona, the most touristy spot, you know. Otherwise you will pay those prices and you'll be elbow to elbow with a bunch of tourists. That's not the point of what we're doing. So typically the places that you stay, you'll get a cost of living adjustment down for the most part, like the majority of the time. Like, when you leave North America or a lot of Western Europe, if you're coming from there, you're going to get a cost of living adjustment down. And that's typically the places that we target. We actually recently did an episode 126, 9 locations that you can live as digital nomad for under $2,000 per month. And this is like comfortably live, right? So yeah. you'd be looking
and that
at
was including accommodations and just
everything
that you're, yeah.
all in. Yeah. We counted
food,
in
everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything except for a flight because we yeah. don't know, you could be coming from anywhere. So yeah. that would probably be the second biggest expense would be yeah. the flights, depending on where you're coming from. Actually, fortunately, we did a good episode on how to get cheap flights.
Yeah, and while you're looking, right. yeah, we did. While you're looking for that episode number to kind of add to what you're saying about both flights and accommodations, that this isn't vacation, I kind of forget. We haven't talked about this in a while because I used to preach this all the time. But yeah, a lot of people have this connotation when they see how much we're traveling. It's like, how can you possibly afford that? Like, you must have so much money, or you must have a trust fund, or you must, like, I don't know, like, won the lottery or something. Like, what are you, like, this just is impossible. A lot of people just think it's so expensive to travel. Because if you're thinking about the way you would normally vacation, typically you're going to find a hotel room that's, you know, X, like, a lot of times our monthly rent for places is the same price of like 3 or 4 nights in a hotel in that same. So sure. just think about that. Like, you're like, how are you doing this? Because what you're spending in a week on your whole vacation is probably what we spend for 2 months living in that location, because mm-hmm. you're getting an Airbnb, it's an apartment, it's rent prices. It's not like a crazy hotel nightly price. Even if you look at Airbnbs, that same place, if you book it per night, it's going to be a lot less expensive once you book it. If you look at that price for 30 days versus 4 days or something a week, the price goes down the longer that you book it. And a lot of people don't know that because maybe you've never looked at that before. So you get a big discount in that way. And like Jeff said, maybe you're not staying in the most popular tourist place. Like, you're staying in the neighborhoods where other people live, and it's still walkable to do all of the things. And then the flights on top of that, and Jeff will talk about a good episode in a second. There's a bit, you know, if you're flying across the world once a year for a big vacation, a lot of times most people do that around holiday times, or like you have it stuck in your mind that you want to fly this Saturday to this Saturday so you don't miss work days or whatever. Whereas a digital nomad, you have a lot more flexibility, where sometimes I'm like, oh, I would love to leave on Tuesday, but the flight is actually a whole lot cheaper if I leave on Thursday, so I'll stay here 2 more days, you know? Mm-hmm. So you can get prices for a lot less, and then you're also traveling, like, you might fly across the world and then travel to a couple different places around that area and, you know, and stay for 4 months somewhere before you fly back, you know, across the continent, but you learn to find good deals and you usually have more flexibility. So yeah, what was that? Did you find the podcast episode?
Yeah, episode 121. We went through a whole bunch of ways to find cheap flights.
Yeah. And you can find them. Like, I typically book flights 2 to 3 weeks in advance because that's, I don't want to make plans before that close in. I don't know where I want to go or what I want to do. And usually that's fine. Sometimes we do end up paying a little bit more every now and then because I want to wait, but it's not that much more expensive than if you book 3 to 6 months out, like people think that you're, you know, supposed to do. So if you just wait and you're flexible and you find the flight deals, and we talked about this, sometimes we go different locations just because we find a good flight deal, or I didn't know I was going to go to this place, but it's on the way. Yeah. Maybe I'll just stay there for a week. Cool. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, that's kind of like the flexibility that that offers, and then just living as a local, and also the meals as well. Typically when you go on vacation, you're eating out at, you know, either at your hotel or at a cool restaurant for every single meal. And that does really add up, versus like when you live as a nomad for a month or plus in a location, you go to the grocery store and you cook at home and you live like you would at home. So it's often less expensive. And then also being home, like, there's a lot more expenses I feel like I have when I'm back in the US, of like, you know, with the car, with gas,
heating
with insurance,
yeah, right.
with heating, with electricity, with like, I just end up shopping more, like buying more things on Amazon because I'm home and I can and I have a place. But when I'm traveling, like, I don't have room to carry a lot of stuff. So I spend money on different things. So it is a lot less expensive than you would imagine.
Yeah. I got nothing else that I would actually add to that.
Perfect. So I guess that actually brings us to the close of our top 10 Googled questions, part 1 and 2. If you haven't listened to the first part, there are some good questions in the episode right before this, so check that out as well. And if any of this sounds good to you, we talked a lot about the pros and the cons. There's a lot of ups and downs of this episode, so hopefully we didn't scare you away. Digital nomad life is amazing. So if you don't yet have a job that you can do while you travel the world, hop on our email list. Check out beachcommute.com/email. We send a lot of resources to help you find jobs, how to track them down, how to get jobs, like all sorts of career help there. And beachcommute.com/91 is a great resource to look at all different types of jobs that exist. And any other resources or anything else we missed, Jeff?
Yeah, so when I release this episode, you can go into the show notes in either player that you're using, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, any of the other offshoots of those. In the show notes, I will link each one of the episodes that we talk about.
There's a lot of them. We talk a lot about episodes here.
Yeah, I think we started off like I prepared with like two, and now I've got a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like 10.
Amazing. So you've got a lot of episodes to listen if any of these little topics,
but
pick the ones, yeah, that appeal to you. Check those out. We do also have a premium membership where we send out really awesome remote companies that are hiring each day, who are really looking for a job and want to save yourself a lot of time from searching through job boards that are really unhelpful and useless. We do the hard work and find those awesome remote jobs for you. So just head to our website and check out, that's called the Digital Nomad Jobs Daily membership. And other than that, I think that we will see you next week.
Thanks for joining us. See you next week.